Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor.
How are you doing? It's a great day.
It is a great day.
I just had great news, maybe.
Really?
From John, one of our guests.
Oh, yes.
He's efforting.
I can't wait. We'll hear more about that later in the show. We'll hear all about Lee's good news and why he's so excited today. And I don't blame you.
Yes.
I share your enthusiasm, definitely. Well, Lee, I got a text message from my sister last week, and I went, oh, my gosh, my niece in Arizona has swine flu.
Oh, really?
And was in the hospital. Yeah, she's 24, and I'm thinking, wow.
That's not even one of the risk people, are they? 24?
I don't know, but we're about to find out here in a moment.
We have a swine flu expert?
We do. We have someone to tell us all about it. You hear a lot about it. You hear about how it's affecting businesses. I mean, I don't know anyone that is not top of mind for them right now. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Dr. Elena George to share with us a little bit more about the H1N1 virus. Welcome.
Thank you, Amy. It's great to be here.
I kind of like H1N1 better than swine flu.
Right. I want to know, is this a real problem or is this one of those fake epidemics like the Y2K? I call it the swine 2K.
Swine 2K, Lee.
Because I think it's a little bit, you know, a lot of noise, but how much...
I love how you get right to the chase.
Yeah.
Wonderful. You know, you put it in a very stark way, but as a physician, I think that you're not off the track here. I'm very concerned that there's been a lot of heat, shed on this subject, and the reality doesn't bear up to what's being put forth on TV and radio, and it's just this mantra of you need to get your shot, everybody's going to die. It's really not the case. And someone being
it's the flu, right?
It like, is the flu.
As so a people fact, get the flu every year.
They do. And statistics show that seasonal flu suffers about 36,000 people die per year of the seasonal flu. And so far in the U.S., they say 4,000 people have died of the H1N1. So
is that in addition to the 3,000 that are dying of the regular, or this in combination?
No. This is where the complication sets in.
Uh-huh.
The actuality... The numbers don't bear up to what's being said. We need to know what's going on underneath the radar. And the reality is, as of the end of July, the beginning of August, the CDC stopped counting documented H1N1 cases. They don't have tested positive cases. It's by self-reporting.
Hmm.
So if you come into the doctor's office and you say you have a fever, you have some body aches, you're part of that H1N1 cohort now. Not that you've been tested. There's no proof. But you're going to be counted in that number. So they went from 1,000 at the beginning of September to 4,000 a couple of weeks ago. And that estimation is based on everybody being thrown in the mix, cold sufferers, hypochondriacs maybe, all sorts of people. So it's not as prevalent as we're led to believe. And it's not as deadly as we're led to believe. You know, the symptoms are identical. Fever, chills, body aches, nausea, diarrhea. And it's indistinguishable, technically, from the flu. And it's very important to know that it's not the H1N1 that's causing the death. It's the secondary bacterial infection. So when you talk about people dying from H1N1, it's not exactly correct. It's the pneumonia that happens. It's a secondary process. So the immune system is very complex. When the virus attacks one phase of the immune system, the bacteria take advantage of the situation, and that's where you get the bacterial infection. And if you go back to 1918 and the flu epidemic, the deaths were not caused by the flu virus. It was by the bacterial pneumonia that happened after the fact. So it's not the H1. I just want people to really realize it's not the virus that's killing you. It's the fact that you can be susceptible, and depends on who you are. 90% of the people don't even know they have this. They may have a couple of days of being fatigued, dizzy, maybe fever, and then it goes away. It's about 10% of the people who go to a full-blown infection. I hope that your niece is doing okay.
She is. Yes,
she should recover. You know, most of the people are recovering, and it's a very small subset that don't make it.
Right.
So I don't think people should be lining up for a vaccine that is not really well-tested. There's a lot of information about how vaccines, what's in them and the ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I've written a lot on the subject. One of the major players is thimerosal, which is mercury.
Sure.
And I learned this a couple of days ago, which I actually didn't know. In the vial, when you're doing your shots for patients with H1N1, you cannot throw the vial, the excess, down the drain because it's a hazmat situation.
Hmm. So but you can inject it into a person.
That was my thought. If you can't throw it down the drain,
can't go in the water system. But
how are you going to put it into somebody? Right. I mean, the thimerosal dose in the vial is 25 times what the EPA says is safe.
And this is specific to the H1N1?
All vaccines.
All vaccines?
All have pretty much the same amount of thimerosal, about 0.25.
And that's a preservative? Or
is preservative. Mm-hmm. That's right. The only reason they use it, they say, is to make it last longer.
Longer, right. Even though this is supposed to come in and out and get rid of the flu vaccine, you want to use it.
It's not quickly.
Like you want to store this for
exactly.
6 months or a year.
And it's not in all of the H1N or any vaccines. Some of the single-dose vaccines don't have it. It's mm-hmm. the multi-dose vaccine.
Right, and that was the catch-22 because they were producing too slowly the single dose, so they had to do the multiple dose in order to get more of it out there.
There's a question, too, is how they're going to produce it in more volume.
Right
now they use chickens, and people who are allergic to albumin, which is the protein in chicken eggs, can't take this because they may have an allergic reaction.
Right.
But there's lobbying amongst the pharmaceutical industry to grow it in other things.
Right.
Chicken, monkeys, all sorts of different media.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question about DNA transfer. Mm-hmm. When you grow things in culture, there's mixture of the DNA.
Sure.
So what are you injecting if you're not sure what you're getting? You may be getting some sort of foreign DNA that gets incorporated into your body.
Yeah, that they're making it seem, well, in some cases, weren't they even, the government was making certain groups of people take this vaccine, whether they wanted to or not?
That happened in New York with some of the nurses and some of the healthcare professionals, and thank goodness that stopped.
Mm-hmm.
They went to court and they lost that. The city lost the mandate, thank goodness.
Right.
So in general, though, what are some of the things our listeners can do to protect themselves or try to prevent getting, whether it's the flu or H1N1?
The first thing is common sense. You know, things like cleanliness, washing your hands. The most common reason that people get infected is that they touch a surface and then rub their eye or, unfortunately, pick their nose. Or they introduce it into their bodies by local contact. So if you keep your hands clean, that's one major player. If you're sick, stay home so you don't infect other coworkers, which is a major thing, even with children. Nutrition is a major player here. So sleeping and getting good quality sleep is very important. Our immune system actually resets itself and ramps up when we're in the deepest part of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're getting a couple hours a night or you're up frequently, that's really sapping your immune response. And believe it or not, sugar is a problem. Sugar actually dampens the immune system.
Mm.
So after you have a dose of sugar in any form, soda, candy, 6 hours, there's a decrease in the immune response.
Hmm.
That may be enough time for a virus that's sitting in your nose or in your upper airway to cause the infection. So watch your sugar consumption. And the last piece, which is something that I actually learned as well, we know about vitamin C, we know about echinacea, but we don't know about vitamin D. And vitamin D is a major antiviral. And majority of our population, studies are beginning to show, are deficient in vitamin D.
Is that you get it from the sunlight?
Yeah, you do.
So
in the winter, probably you get less because it gets darker sooner.
That's exactly right. And if you think about this, in the Caribbean, where it's people are...
Yeah, how's the swine flu over there?
They don't talk about it.
They don't get the flu, right?
They don't. Because their vitamin D levels are just so much better than ours. Maybe bundle up, we're watching TV, we're playing video games. We don't have enough sun exposure.
What about like in Alaska? Is it rampant in Alaska where they get less sun?
You know, that's a very good question. Or in like Denmark or Sweden,
right.
where they have, that's a good question. But they do have the same variation in flu season.
Mm-hmm.
So when they do enter the winter months, they do have a higher preponderance of it.
Interesting. That's a whole discussion. We could talk for 30 minutes on vitamin D. That's a very hot topic right now. We might have to have you back to talk about that.
You might have to rent out your chickens to help get more flu vaccine.
My chickens are busy laying eggs. Oh, gosh. Wow. So this is definitely affecting companies. But like you said, some of the things that we can do are just common sense.
Just wash your hands like 20 times a day, right?
No.
Everybody be like Monk. Little OCD. Washing your hands solves the problem.
Oh, within reason.
It starts other problems, but it gets rid of this one.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. Any other resources, any places folks can go if they want to learn more about the risks or how to prevent?
Sure. Well, I have a website, and I've actually compiled a lot of information on it. It's drgeorge.com, D-R, I'm sorry, drelainageorge.com, D-R-E-L-A-I-N-A, George like the man's name.com. And it's, I want to make it like a one-stop shop for patients to go to so they can link to vaccine safety, anything in the government that new information that needs to be addressed. And I have quite a few blogs that I've written on the subject, and so that people can actually learn and take control of their health. I'm not trying to tell people what they need to do, but I think they need to have the information so right. they can make an informed decision.
Sure.
That's best for them. Right, yes. Exactly. And absolutely. You can use that swine 2K if you want.
I like that, actually.
Swine 2K. Oh, goodness. You're always a wealth of information, Link.
I know a little bit about a lot of things.
Yes, you do. Dr. George, thanks so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, like we've said, it does affect businesses, it
sure.
affects individuals.
Schools, and I mean, employees, there's a lot of repercussions to this.
Really, mm-hmm. and it's important to get the real deal and the real scoop, and to be well-informed. That's so important, and properly informed. Next up this morning, we have Peter Canalicchio. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Good morning. Good to be here.
So we're going from swine flu to licensing brands, Inc., that's a shift, huh?
There you go.
That is a major shift.
They're connected, right? Can you license my Swine 2K cartoon that I...
Let's get it trademarked first.
Let's trademark that, put that out on some hats and T-shirts.
Exactly. Well, first of all, tell us in layman's terms, what is brand licensing?
Brand licensing, we have to step back and think about what is licensing. So if you think about when you rent a DVD or you rent a car, you're renting a tangible product or
sure.
asset. So when you think about licensing, you're basically renting an intangible asset. It's a part of intellectual property that is owned by someone, and you want to borrow it. And so
right.
effectively, that's what you're talking about.
So like that would be, say, I sell T-shirts, and then I license the right to put Atlanta Falcons on this T-shirt, right? Is that an example?
That's a perfect example, exactly.
Walk us through the process.
So what happens is, and that's part of the reason why I got into this business, is I started working in licensing back in 1997 with the Coca-Cola company, and since had worked with Rubbermaid. But basically what happens is a brand owner, let's take Rubbermaid for example, thinks about its brand and where it should be in the marketplace, and Rubbermaid's in laundry accessories and automotive
right.
organization.
They own a million brands that you don't even know about.
Exactly. And then they think all the time, and they ask the consumers, where else should we have our products? And so those are the brand extensions. And the consumer basically gives the brand owners the rights. And so once they figure out where their brands ought to be, where they're not, then they have to figure out whether or not they're going to manufacture it, they're going to acquire a company that does that today, or they're going to license their brand to a company that does it better than they can.
Mm-hmm.
So why would a company choose to license? I mean, what are some of the benefits?
It's free money, right?
Well, money is definitely one of the key drivers, but it's not, in my mind, it's not the primary driver. As a licensor or a brand owner, you want your products to be out there in as many places as possible. So it's part of your marketing. It's part of your interaction with your consumer. And it also, the more that your product is on the shelf in your customers' stores, the less your competitors' products are out
right.
there.
But it also can dilute the brand, right? If you're out in too many, you know, if you're licensing your name to something that's not really makes any sense, then it can dilute the value of your brand, can it?
Oh, absolutely. And that is a really important point. And I talk about pitfalls. That's one of them for a licensor, is to oversaturate the market. And the problem happens when your brand becomes so attractive that everybody that's got a product wants to put your brand on it. And you have to think very hard about what is the brand positioning. What is your brand out in the marketplace intended to do?
Sure.
What's the brand architecture? What are you trying to accomplish? What do I mean by architecture? So let's think of Kodak, for example. You start at the bottom. It's made out of high quality. The images are made out of high quality paper. And then they're reliable. The functional benefit is they're reliable. The emotional benefit is that you have your image of yourself and loved one on paper.
Right, a memory.
And then ultimately, it's the what they call the what's bigger than or the bigger opportunity is that you got immortality.
Right.
So for Kodak, they have to think about their brand and say, where does it make sense to be one products.
Right. What do you want to be associated with?
Exactly. And so if you start licensing Kodak
underwear,
then
like you're like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Makes no sense, and you will really damage the brand if you do that. And you'll get a little bit of money, but in the long run, you'll lose a lot of money on the brand.
So what would be the first step someone would take?
Can, like, anybody do this? Or, like can anybody license their logo? Like, my thing's called Business Radio X. Is that something that I can talk to somebody about licensing?
Well, that's a great question. The more relevant the brand is, the more viability you have to license. So if you think of...
Like, my product's called Coca-Cola Business Radio X. Can you help me with that?
If Coca-Cola will give you their brand, if you can license it, because I don't think they would let you just put it on there, then definitely that's an example of where it matters, where it has relevance. So you really do want to talk about brands that are important to the particular target audience. So in your particular case, Brand Radio X, for a specific channel may be very relevant, and so therefore there may be actually an opportunity. It kind of made a little bit of light of it, but it's relevant to the target that you're trying to connect with.
Right.
So in that case, there are lots of possibilities beyond the top great brands that are out in the world.
So this is an asset that some businesses may have, but they're not really tapping into. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And more so, I think there's a tremendous number of companies out there that have great products or services that don't even know about licensing brands. And so they're missing out too. So there needs to be some kind of marketplace here where we're trying to connect great companies that have products and services with great brands.
That are complementary, that can really kind of create some sort of synergy that expands everybody.
Exactly. So there's latent need out there where consumers don't even know about products that they want branded. But if the smart brand owners and the businesses that have those great products can get together, they'll launch the next juggernaut, and the consumers will thrive and go after it quickly.
Is that what your company does?
My company helps both prospective licensees and licensors understand what brand licensing is and then how to take advantage of it.
And do you connect them? Are you the connector?
I am the connector, correct.
Wow.
Got it. I've got probably a silly question, but what's the difference between a license and a trademark?
Okay, great question. A trademark is the way that you legally register your a name or a logo, so it becomes intellectual property. If you use a name or a logo and you don't trademark it, you're opening yourself up to others using it as well. It doesn't mean that you can't use it, but others can use it also. Once you have established protection for a trademark, then you have the ability to go license it or rent it to somebody else.
Okay.
And then you help throughout the process, right?
Correct. So what I'm trying to do is help those great companies out there who have brands that are relevant in targets to understand where they can extend their brand other than, say, where they're manufacturing it, and then go help them find great companies with products and services
that match
that can match up. Exactly.
Is there any place to go for just the basics on licensing?
So I do have a website. It's called Brand Licensing Expert.com, brandlicensingexpert.com, where I provide basic information on what licensing is. These are free downloads. There's another one on the benefits of brand licensing to both licensors and licensees, and the final one is on the pitfalls to avoid. In addition, there's a great organization called LIMA, L-I-M-A, lima.org, and they are kind of the parent organization for all licensing.
What are some of the pitfalls? I'm just curious. I'll go to the website. I want to check it out myself. But what are some of the pitfalls, and how can I avoid them?
So some of the pitfalls, for example, if you're a prospective licensee, and I was talking to John about this earlier before we got on the show this morning, you may be very excited about going to get a license. You're going to get the Nike license. Well, what are you going to do? Well, you're going to tell Nike how great your product is and how much you can produce against that brand. And how many channels you're going to fill with this product. Well, you may be overreaching. And, of course, when Nike hears that, they're going to expect that you're going to deliver on that.
Right.
So the first gotcha is that you can overreach, create false expectations, and then you underdeliver and everybody's unhappy.
Right. But it's also an opportunity, though, because you have, like, look at Nike. They have their brand, and they partnered with iTunes, and then they created that Nike Plus where that combines your iPod with this little pedometer thing, and they created a community around it. So that's a huge synergy for both of them.
That's exactly what I was just talking about. This is an opportunity where someone from both companies got together and figured out what's out there that can make a difference in the way people consume their lives. They developed the product and made, launched it, and look what's going on. Not only do you have product being bought, but you have communities that are all about
right.
it. So that is the perfect example of everything coming together in the right way. Where there's another pitfall is basically where a licensee may say, oh, I'd love to have the Coca-Cola brand. They get the license, and then all they do is stamp out the logo and slap
right.
it on their product, and then they expect it to sell, number
just
one.
Just because it says Coca-Cola on it.
Just because it says Coca-Cola. And by the way, Coca-Cola is very unhappy because logo slapping never does anything for anyone.
Right.
So they have to build into their product the intrinsics of the brand, and they have to represent those brand intrinsics
right.
in a way that really makes a difference to the consumer, who expects if it's Coca-Cola, then it's about authenticity, it's about fun, all
right.
these different things which are important to the success of the product.
And that's tricky in a company like Coca-Cola. I mean, remember they had the jeans and they had all this line of
mm-hmm.
clothing. It was just like, when do you say when?
Stop, yeah.
Right. And for Coca-Cola, it's a little bit different. They use licensing, brand licensing, as a marketing tool. So this is a way of getting their brand into consumers' hands in a way that connects in a meaningful way. And the neat thing about Coca-Cola brand licensing is that when somebody buys a Coke T-shirt, they have it in their closet for years. So the connection stays, whereas if they do a marketing campaign, you might see an advertisement on the television or see a banner ad for seconds, and then it's gone and it costs them millions. Whereas when they create a licensed merchandise program, the licensees actually build the program and then manufacture the product. You take your money out of your wallet and go pay for it, and then you mm-hmm. keep it and you cherish it. So that's the big
and it's and in their business, it's a reminder like, oh, Coca-Cola, I'm thirsty, like that. They
yeah.
want that little push that's like you think of Coke.
Yeah.
Exactly. And as long as the licensing program is done well so that the licensed product supports the intrinsics of the brand, they're going to complement each other and it's continued to be a virtuous cycle.
Right.
Wow. A lot of great knowledge.
Good stuff.
Yeah, great stuff. I can't wait to visit that website too, just to learn more about the licensing. Pete, thanks so much for being with us today. Give us your website one more time.
Sure. It's www.brandlicensingexpert.com, and it's been a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you. You have a lot of expertise to share with folks, and I would definitely encourage them to reach out and talk with you. Thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome.
So, drum roll, please. Lee,
it's
very excited. You're very
excited.
The star,
the moment we've been waiting for.
Yes. So, there's nothing worse than turning something on and it's on for 30 seconds and it
yes.
turns off.
Right.
And
my laptop/desktop computer that
exactly.
I have in my house.
Exactly. Or your cell phone or your security system at home
or
that
number little
of other
electric
things.
Pen that you were whining about earlier.
Oh, yeah. The digital signature pen. I mean, so many things take batteries. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show from Batteries Plus. We have John Cyphers.
So thanks for having me today for the first time. And Lee, you kind of put me on the spot there. But
I know. The pressure's on you now, bud.
I feel your
the
pain,
battery
Lee.
Guy.
The battery guy.
We
but really,
the snoring lady, the snoring doctor, the battery guy, and the branding guy.
Exactly. I'm not sure what I am today.
I don't know
but,
what I am. But
there really is a huge need for batteries and to be able to go to one place. There's nothing worse. I really, for my little electronic pen, I probably went to 12 different places looking for a battery. And then I discovered Batteries Plus online. Tell us about Batteries Plus.
Sure. Yeah, I hear that a lot with our customers where I've been to 10 different places. And we're trying to educate on the fact that we are a specialty battery store. I'm looking around the room here. You all have watches on. We all have cell phones, laptops. Some people have motorcycles. We all drive cars. Basically, it's a battery. It's something that we're going to have in the store about 80 to 90% of the time that we'll have in stock, where you can go in, purchase it, and it should solve your problem.
Car batteries too, Lee.
No, you have car batteries too?
Yes.
Car batteries, golf cart batteries. I mean, I went to the store.
What kind of store is this?
It's not a very
like
big store.
It's like a superstore of batteries?
No, it's not a very big store. It's just amazing. I could not believe when I left. I like I told you, I went to get my laptop battery and my little pen thing, and then I went home and I had this shoebox that I filled up with all these batteries that I have not been able to find.
How many batteries does the average person have in their, you know, life?
In their household, it's about, I think there's 26 battery-operated devices. It could be all the way down from your remote control, your laptop, your wireless mouse, your thermometer. There's so many different types of applications that we have batteries for.
And usually you just throw it out when you could get a $3 battery.
Correct.
How crazy is that? Now, the other thing is the going green efforts. You guys rebuild some batteries. So, like, if I have some power tools, which I'm really into the power tools. Mm-hmm. If I have power tools, then I bring them in, and it's not like just getting a new battery. It has, like, three times the charge, y'all told me.
Correct. Well, what it is you'll have a power tool battery pack, and you take it apart, and actually it's just about anywhere from 10 to 12 smaller batteries inside welded together. And what we do is we'll take it apart, put the new batteries in, weld it in there, slap it back together, and that way you're not taking it, throwing it away, and you're not paying basically twice the price, or you can get about half the price for a brand new battery. Usually the batteries that we put in there are usually a little bit better than the ones that you buy at the store.
No doubt. And so tell us about the recycling efforts.
Sure. And like you said, those cordless drill packs, those are something that needs to be recycled. But what we do is we recycle any type of battery, all the way from your little double A's, to your car batteries, golf cart batteries, to large industrial ones, whatever you need. And we've been focusing on it as a big part of our, as you said, going green effort, because that's the wave. You know, that's what everyone's getting involved with.
You think that's going to catch on?
I truly believe so. Yeah, you go.
Yeah, I think we've actually done a Going Green show, and we've got another one coming up too, by the way, with all the winners from the Going Green Atlanta are coming on. But yeah, I also had read an article, and I think it was Fast Company that talked about Batteries Plus with as far as a fast-growing franchise because of electric cars and so many things going away from gas. When you were looking at franchises, why was Batteries Plus attractive? There's so many out there. You've got a business background. You could have done anything.
Could have had a Subway.
Right.
Could have had a Subway. That's true. It was just such a unique market. And we got into it many years ago when the new technologies were coming out. But like I said, when you saw all the different types of devices and you actually looked around and you go shop around and you say, hey, I need a battery for this laptop. You go around the Atlanta stores, the Best Buys, the Staples, whatever. There's no one who has this product. And I said, well, what a neat concept where I can go in one-stop shop. Yes, it's a niche market, but I know that this store is going to have the battery that I need. And there's two sides to the business. There's the retail side, which is people walking in,
right,
and calling over the phone. Then there's also a business-to-business side,
mm-hmm,
which we serve all types of larger customers throughout the Atlanta area, and it's about a 50-50 split. So there was
two
revenue streams in there that made it quite appealing.
For sure.
Now, why is it that batteries die? Like, can't they invent a battery that just never dies?
Well, that's our secret. We don't want you.
Like,
no, they have a certain number of cycle lives. So the material inside can be charged and recharged. My most typical battery is about 500 to 1,000 times.
Okay. Right.
And after that, the material is just spent inside.
It just degrades and then...
And then what we do is if you bring it to my store, we'll take it, we'll send it off to our approved recycling vendors. They recycle the material. And basically, they put it back in. They'll make the same batteries with it over and over again. Like a car battery, the ones you see sitting in the stores are about 98% recycled.
Really?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Did not know that.
I didn't know that either. Mm-hmm. And then the golf carts, too. Those last, what, 5 years maybe?
About 5 years, yeah.
A golf cart battery?
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of things that have batteries, and those are
expensive.
How do
you know about golf cart batteries?
Oh, again, I know a little about a lot of things, put it that way. What's been your biggest battery challenge? I'd love to know. Somebody comes in and says, can you find a battery for? What was it?
A lot of the times, if we don't have it in stock, we can make them.
Yeah.
So
you can make a battery from scratch?
Correct. So I was talking about how we make the cordless drill batteries. Well, someone will come in and they'll have some specialized photography equipment that takes some specialized battery that they just don't make anymore.
Right.
And so what we do is we'll split it apart and say, all right, it's composed of these smaller batteries,
right?
And we'll rebuild it for them, using the old parts.
Yeah, that's something I read on some blog post, that if you peel some of these batteries apart, they're really made of other little teeny batteries. Like sometimes those little batteries that are expensive are actually part of a bigger battery that's cheaper to buy the bigger battery and then peel it apart and use the little teenier batteries. Is that true?
Correct. Like a little cordless phone.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That you have throughout the house. Those are typically, those could be like three AAAs put together that are rechargeable.
Okay. Right. But then they sell it as a special cordless phone battery, and that could be way more expensive than buying the three AAAs.
Correct. But you're buying the expertise of putting it together.
Lee, don't try to do that
yourself. I'm not going to try, but I just thought that was fascinating. That these bigger batteries are really littler batteries, just mm-hmm. crammed together in a little plastic container.
Mm-hmm.
Lee's easily amused late at night with his blogs.
I'm like, that was I didn't know that.
Yeah, sorry. It is interesting. There's wait till you go to the Batteries Plus store, Lee. I'm telling you, you're in.
How big is this? Like the size of a Target?
No. It's about 1,100 to 1,500 square feet.
Like the size of a Starbucks.
He said they hold every 90% of the batteries you can find there.
A lot of the batteries are
little.
Tiny. Yeah, like the batteries like I bought from my. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I bought every battery they had that fits in that little pen thing. Because,
why, you're afraid they're going out of business?
Well, no, they're just so hard to find. And, you know, I was just so delighted to find it. And they were $2. I was like, all right, I'm going to take all 8.
Is that a good idea, though, to buy batteries? And do they go bad? Just by not using them?
They have, a lot of them have anywhere from 3 to 5 year shelf lives. Like mm-hmm. your typical AA's, AAA's will last until 2015. Right. If it's a real specialized cell, we just say, buy what you need, come back again later.
Sure. Put it this way, though. How popular will I be with all the other folks, other agents could, that have the same problem?
That could be another revenue stream for you.
Sure. That's
resell
it.
Resell them when they're on the spot. They're like, hey, how bad do you want this battery? $20.
Oh, gosh. All kinds of ideas here today. So you have 2 franchises, right?
No, he's got a bunch.
Three, actually.
And you told us that. So tell us where they are. They're,
one is in Marietta by the mm-hmm. Big Chicken. Obviously, in Mark.
Yes.
Other one's here in Buckhead. And the third one is in Macon.
Okay. And, again, batteries, you said it was you thought it was a great concept, but your business background is totally different.
Well, for me personally, it was a family business where okay. they got involved many, many years ago.
Okay.
And I just kind of got sold on the concept after working in the corporate world.
Right. So you like this better?
Oh, yes. It's a lot more work, a lot more responsibility, but a lot more enjoyment. You get a lot more fulfillment out of it.
And you do some B2B work too, right?
Right.
Correct. Okay. About half the business is dealing with large, what we call commercial customers.
But what are their battery needs, corporations' battery needs?
I just wrote down a couple here. I have we deal with fire and police departments. They have two-way radios.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They have specialized packs all in their suits. Schools, same type deal. They use a lot of alkaline. Hospitals have all kinds of crazy custom batteries.
So that's probably a big account. You get a hospital.
Yeah, and their defibrillator machines or
Want those to go bad.
Yeah.
Is there? How do you tell? Like, if a battery's dying, is there a way to tell, or it just dies?
Well, your standard AA's, alkaline, AAA, stuff like that. You can test the voltage on them, mm-hmm. and if they're below 1.5 volts, they're bad. Rechargeables, we have a machine that can test them over mm-hmm. a certain period, but. Like your cell phone battery, if it's getting thick, or you're able to spin it on your table, it's a bad battery.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That is the honest. That's the scientific test that we do with our customers in the store.
Spin the battery.
Mm-hmm. Spin the battery.
Or you can see obvious corrosion coming off the top
right.
of it. Then
sure.
You know it's at the end of its life.
My mom used to stick them on her tongue. What's up with that? Is that
well,
really
that's,
a true
that's,
test?
That's for 9
that's
volts.
That's the voltage.
That's 9 volts. If you get stung by it, then it's a good battery. But a lot of
because both of the things are next to each other, you could do that.
Mm-hmm.
But
that can't
be right. When they're on opposite sides, you can't do that. You got to put the whole battery in your mouth.
Oh, yeah, okay. The whole thing in your mouth.
Okay, so someone must have told her that. She didn't realize it was just for 9 volts.
So she does it for all the batteries?
She does it for all the batteries. Sorry, Mom. The double A's and everything. She goes, I mean, we've probably thrown so many batteries out.
Wow, that's a YouTube opportunity there. I would definitely be filming that.
There's a lot of battery myths. A lot of people put batteries
in the refrigerator, right?
That doesn't really make a difference.
It's probably worse because it gets moist then, right? Does that add moisture to
the
mix?
I would say the freezer, if it drops below a certain temperature, then yeah, it's going to decrease the life on it.
Yeah, so that don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
No, you just need to go to Batteries Plus.
You can,
and that's what we claim to be. We claim to be the battery experts.
Right.
If the battery's not your problem, we don't want to sell you one. We want to solve your problem is our main mantra.
That's good. And so you're allowed to lick 9-volt batteries. That's what we learned today. But don't lick a car battery. That's
no.
not good.
No, but the Coca-Cola on the car battery thing.
There you
Tell
go.
Us about that myth. That, I've done that.
That
works.
That is true, actually.
If
you have
not
corrosion, it's the acidic mix.
Oh, it removes the corrosion on a car battery.
Which makes you realize you really shouldn't be drinking Coca-Cola.
That's
imagine
not
that
true.
Your stomach.
You should drink Coca-Cola. It removes all the corrosion of all the food you're eating, all the bad food.
Exactly. Lee's wife works for Coca-Cola, can you tell? Yeah, I think that when you do, when you pour it on and you see all that.
It's not just Coca-Cola. It's other cola products.
It's we use baking soda and water.
See?
Typically.
Arm and Hammer. Go mm-hmm. bust Arm and Hammer a little bit.
I'm not busting them. You know, I love my Coca-Cola on occasion. Oh, goodness. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us all about batteries. And I'm telling our listeners, if you have anything in
your
house.
If you have a battery.
They can
or
find
26
it.
Or so
That's
in
it.
Your house.
We have about 11 stores in the market, so they're spread out all over the city.
But only go to yours.
No, go to everybody. We got good, helpful people everywhere. So.
Yes, absolutely. Very helpful. I mean, all it takes is one trip in, and you'll realize that all those things that
you deliver? Is there a delivery option?
Yes, we do deliver to some business customers.
Wow, good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thanks for being with us today, and we can't wait, Lee, for you to be excited about your new laptop battery.
We'll see.
I actually did check it while we were waiting. Yes. We do have it in stock in the store. So.
There, you see that? That's super service.
That is super service.
Only in John's stores. You can't guarantee it at the other stores.
Thanks so much to our listeners. Thanks for being with us today. Until next week, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show.